Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast maiden is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And this week, we are talking to Sally Rippon. She's an author of many children's books, including the Billy B. Brown series and the more recent School of Monsters series. Everything she's written over the last 15 years has been for kids who struggle with reading after having witnessed her own son's struggle. Her latest book, Wild Things, How We Learn to Read and What Can Happen If We Don't, is her first book for adults. A mixture of personal experience, research and interviews with experts and members of the disability and neurodivergent communities. Sally set out to write the book she needed when her son first started school.
This podcast contains truth, laughter and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Yes. Hello, Kate.
Hello. We're in separate rooms today.
Yes. I've got a sick person, sick Molly at home. So,
yep.
But I've got a little sound system set up here. So hopefully it sounds okay.
Hopefully we will find out next week when the episode comes out. It's still cold in Melbourne. For those of you obsessed with our weather chats, it's cold. I've got a blanket on my knee. It feels like winter's
here
back. Anyway.
Come on, spring. The trees are coming back though. Like my daughter said this morning, oh, the trees are coming back, Mum. I was like, yep, they're coming. Come on.
Yep. Yeah. The trees are coming back.
Mm. Yeah, nearly school holidays for us here in Victoria too. So we're dragging people to school.
Yeah. Actually, when this comes out, it will be school holidays. So, we will have made
people.
It. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so we have got a great person to interview today. Would you like to say hello?
Hello, everybody. I'm so excited to be here. Longtime fan and just absolutely thrilled to be in the Two Peas podcast room.
Oh, thank you, Sally. We're thrilled to have you.
We really, really, really are. So we will ask our three questions and then get onto the book.
Okay. Yeah.
So our first question is, do you have any songs or a band or music that either gets you through the hard times or pumps you up in the good times?
This is such a good question. I mean, how often do you get asked about your music on a parenting podcast, right? So I was so excited that I had to go through my coping list of favourite songs. It's as hard to choose as your favourite book, but I've come up with three. Can I give you three?
Yes, you can.
Excellent. So there's a band from London called Jungle, and absolutely anything that you put on from them will just make you want to get up and dance.
Ooh.
They're just so upbeat. Their video clips are amazing. They have all these incredible dancers. And you could start with the very first song I remember hearing quite a while ago was called Busy Earning, which is a really fun get up and dance track. But otherwise, Heavy California is a really nice one too. So if you need to get up and dance, you got to clean your house, you just need something to keep you going, Jungle is your person.
All right, great. That will go on Spotify.
Yep.
Okay, big feelings person that I am, I want to include a Manchester band called Elbow.
Okay.
Most beautiful lyrics ever. One of my all-time favorite songs is a song called Starlings, and it's kind of summarizes the relationship with my partner and I. So we met quite late in life, and you know, we often say to each other, we're old enough and ugly enough to accept each other for who we are.
Yeah.
And so the lyrics of Starling are just beautiful, and there's this one line that we say to each other that just completely makes my heart explode, even though we've been together for 10 years.
Oh.
Which is, you're the only person in any room I'm ever in. And
beautiful line.
And then I need to put an Australian artist in too. So Megan Washington is extraordinary artist. I think my favorite song of hers is Begin Again. And sometimes when you just need a really good cry,
that's
when you put on, and it just tugs at your heartstrings. And I particularly want to mention her for this podcast because she gave a beautiful TEDx talk in Sydney about overcoming a stutter. And it is just so powerful to listen to. And just also shows you the power of music, of art. Mm. And also of telling your story, you know, that when you tell your story, you allow people the space to tell theirs. So she's an extraordinary person.
I've seen her live. I think she's incredible.
Yeah. I will look that up. Thank you. Our next question is, did you win any awards at school?
I love this question too, because I can say no.
People are either cheering because they say no, or they get scared because they won a lot.
No, that's right. I was mediocre at sport. I was just not very competitive. I think probably the best thing that ever happened to me at school, I used to write a lot of stories, even in grade six.
Mm.
I was making my own books, and I had a teacher in grade six. Actually, it was year seven, so I had started high school, who used to read my stories out in class, and that was like winning all the awards.
Definitely.
Almost been all my life. I think he was the person that spurred me on to be a writer because he'd read my stories out and I felt like a real author. And, of course, I'd shrink down in my chair and I'd blush and I'd be all embarrassed.
Yeah.
But I was so proud that he took my work seriously. So no awards, but some pretty awesome teachers along the way.
Oh, that reminds me of my music teacher when I could flip to the last page of the recorder book in year seven and I played the last song and I just thought I was amazing.
And she went on to become a professional recorder player.
I would if there was any place
there
to go.
Recorder, those really stinky instruments that they used to hand out in class.
Yeah.
You know, when you're good at it, you're good at it, Sally. And I embraced it.
I just remember they used to smell.
Oh, disgusting. Now at least the kids get their own. We just had to use one out of a box.
Anyway, enough about me. Silly me.
And our very last question is, why are you a P?
So I only came across your podcast fairly recently, mainly because for a long time I held out thinking that I wasn't able to say I was part of this community. I'm a disabled person myself. My son is neurodivergent, so he's ADHD and dyslexic. Yes. But I'd never thought until recently that that was a disability, and it wasn't until my friend Eliza Hull, who's a beautiful musician and also a disability advocate, that explained to me the social model of disability. And she said, you know, if your son is disabled by the environment that he's learning in, surely that means he has a disability. And that prospect just blew my mind. I didn't think that was something that we could consider, and I ran it past him, and he agreed. He saw her point. And the most beautiful thing that gave him and also us was for me to stop comparing myself to other parents that had kids that weren't neurodivergent and to tap into these beautiful communities that are all about reaching out for each other.
Yep.
And, it was a really powerful moment for us to think, okay, these are our people, you know, stop comparing ourselves to other people, and there are more people out there. Because I was certainly, for some weird reason, I kept myself very isolated and alone. I think I was very ashamed as a children's author that I had a son that couldn't read. Mm. I mean, he does read. That's silly to say that, but he really struggles and he doesn't read for pleasure.
Mm.
So, you know, I just kind of kept that as my dirty secret for a really long time.
Mm. Yes. Mm. Oh, yeah. Definitely, definitely part of the P tribe. And I think it's also because disability has had a terrible stigma that it should never have had. It's just a part of who you are or we are. But yes, society and schooling is not set up for neurodivergent people. So 100% they have a disability, and it's an awesome thing that they have, but we just have to tweak the world a bit.
Yes, yes. So where should we start? I just want to say we're big fans of Billy B. Brown in our house and they came along at just the most perfect time for my daughters, especially my daughter Molly, who has lots of difficulty reading. But for her to be able to take one of those books to school and even just pretend was really massive, right? And so I'm just super grateful to you at that time that she felt like she had a book that she could try.
Mm-mm. And feel included.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
With her twin, yeah. Was, you know, reading through all of them, and then, you know, there was that complexity there, her sister being able to just boom ahead with reading and then not be able to, yeah, that's really tricky stuff.
It's great to hear that, because I actually started writing the Billy series when my son, who's now 19, was in grade 2, and that was when I first saw that he was struggling to keep up with the class and struggling to learn to read and saying things like, I hate school, I hate books, I hate reading, which was, you know, like chalk on a proverbial chalkboard.
Yes.
My fingers on a proverbial chalkboard, you know
what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And so I did set out to write a series that was still inciting and exciting enough for a young person to read, but using the language of a reader. And I would test everything out on him, because he has the attention span of a goldfish. And if I saw his attention wane, or if I could see that he wasn't engaged by the story, I'd cut it down, I'd make it tighter, make it snappier. So I road tested everything on him, and it was actually his idea to come up with the Jack series, because he said, why does Jack have to tell the story all the time? Why do we have to hit Jack?
Yes.
So I wrote the Jack series for him too. But look, I thought that was all I was going to need to have to do to get him to be a reader. It was just write a series that he'd want to read.
Of course.
But apparently there's more to it.
Yes,
who knew? Oh. I know. And all the – and I have three children that were good – big readers before I had the twins, but all the, you know, posts on Facebook or Book Week, or, you know, we've all got a friend who's a librarian or who's, you know, if you just show them this genre, then they'll read, and you're like, no, they won't.
And I don't know, for me, I was reading in the NICU in the crib, so I was like, I've been reading and they before they should have even been born. So it doesn't, you know, energy and effort doesn't necessarily equate.
I think it's a really important point, because I'm also a member of a lot of dyslexia parent support groups. It's actually a really painful thing for a parent to read, to be told that if you just read to your child enough from birth, or if you just chose a different genre, and then what they're hearing is, surely you're doing something wrong.
Yes.
Where in fact dyslexia is a neurodevelopmental difference. And so it doesn't matter how much you read to your child. Having said that, there are also ways that dyslexic children can be taught from very young. And I didn't know anything about early intervention when my son was much, much older. So there are ways that kids who struggle to learn to read can be given that extra support. And by the time this comes out, the news will be well and truly out that there's now just mandated phonics checks in Victoria.
I just saw that.
Yeah, New South Wales as well. And that has been this parent group just lobbying, just saying, look, you know, yes, some kids will pick up reading by osmosis. I did as a child, you know, my older children did too. But if we want to make sure every child in the classroom is given the same access to reading, they all need to be taught in this systematic phonics way.
Yep.
Because they're going to fall through the cracks. And after grade two, you can't keep teaching them to read, because after that they're supposed to read to learn, not learn to read. And it's not fair to expect a teacher who's in grade 3, grade 4 to be still helping these kids reading. If we can get it going really early and get these kids up to scratch by grade 2, they should be able to access the information that all their classmates can. So this is an amazing parent group that has been lobbying for this for such a long time. Oh. They're all celebrating. I've got all these.
Oh, congratulations. Yes.
You would know how powerful parents are, because we hate seeing our children suffer. We don't want other people's children.
That's right. Because normally by the time we've worked it out, our kids are through that. But
that's
still fighting and fighting for other kids and fighting that this injustice just doesn't take place anymore. Powerful.
Yeah.
Just incredible. Yeah.
How did you manage the early years at school when you realised things? I mean, you write it in the book, but in your words for us today, how did that, or when did it unfold in front of you when you're like, oh my gosh,
I got to do something?
Yeah.
Too late. Yeah. I'm really embarrassed to admit that. You know, I think because the other thing to say that is actually quite important is that it was very clear that he was dyslexic from early on, because that's something you can see quite easily if a child struggles to learn to read. But it wasn't until he was near nine that we also had him assessed for ADHD. Right. And I didn't know anything about ADHD. You know, I had all these terrible ideas in my head that it was just, you know, naughty boys that drank a lot of red cordial.
Picked holes in the wall and you saw them on a current affair. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And so, you know, my son was this sweet, sunny, lovely child all throughout primary school because his teachers loved him. We just totally didn't do anything about it. And I think had he been a child that had played up, he maybe would have got the attention that he needed and the intervention he needed. So it wasn't until he reached high school where he was having to do with lots of different teachers and being in different classrooms, he just couldn't keep up at all. And the wheels fell off and he went downhill really quickly, not just in his work and his school engagement, but his self-esteem, how he felt about himself. And it was horrible to watch. And I kept saying, what am I doing wrong? What have I done wrong? And it was actually the Dyslexic Victoria support group that suggested I might want him to have him assessed for ADHD. And that changed everything, because when I researched and realized, you know, what ADHD is and how it can affect your capacity to focus in the classroom and listen and follow what's going on, I just beat myself up and I thought, why didn't I know this? Why didn't I give him the support he needed? So, you know, I felt like a very bad mother for a very long time. And I thought, well, at least what I can do with all this information I know now is to pass it on to other parents. And so I did huge amount of research, huge amount of reading, asking lots and lots of questions of other parents and people, like you say, in the neurodivergent disability community. And I put all of that into this book. I thought, if I messed it up, at least I can show you how I messed up.
Well, you're super honest in it. And I'm really grateful to that. You say, all the way along, I wished I had have done this, or I'm sad I didn't do that. And that's how we feel.
Yeah. And you end with, you know, if I could do it again. Like, that's a really big, scary thought that parents just think alone at 2 o'clock in the morning. They don't write it on a piece of paper and let everybody read it. So super powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I have to say, you know, it is scary sending something out that's so personal and so vulnerable.
Yes.
But I have to say, every time I have seen someone, particularly a public figure, speak about something really close to them, so about mental health, or Em Ruciano recently, her press talk about ADHD, so powerful. And these people are being vulnerable in front of an audience. And it makes you think, oh, my goodness, I'm not alone. I'm not the only person that's lying at 2 in the morning feeling like this.
Yeah.
So That's at the least that I can do is to be honest and vulnerable. I managed to do that very easily in my fiction, of course, because I can make all my characters do things. But really all my characters are me. And so this is me with no veil.
It's a big deal, Sally.
It's a really big deal. And I think, like, when I was reading through the book, I was just like, oh, this is me. This is 100% my life. I mean, I suppose I was lucky because the twins were flagged as probably having issues from birth. So we constantly had follow-up with the pediatrician. We had heaps of assessments at school. I was advocating before they were at school. So really that's a bonus, which, you know, as you say, all parents should have. We should all have testing done or all learn through phonics or whatever. But, yeah, I had my boys doing that in prep. So they, even though they both have dyslexia, they can read. I mean, they never sit down and pick up a book. That's, you know, not something they do. But they'll fact check stuff. They'll use books for the purpose of, you know, gaining knowledge or learning about V8 engines or whatever. But they love books. They love them being read to them.
Yeah. And look, reading we use for everything. And the other thing I have to say is I used to be really snobby about what reading was.
Me too.
My two older boys, you know, incredible readers. They read fluently in two languages. We're great, Mum. I am fantastic. But then number three comes along and he's not doing the same things. And so I used to be very smug about that. Oh. I used to think I was this amazing mum because we'd have these internet-free days and look at my kids reading on the couch. But you know what? For a lot of kids that struggle to learn and in very conventional ways, the internet is a godsend. It's an amazing thing. And my partner is also very dyslexic and very, very ADHD. And one of the things that ADHD can give you is this extraordinary ability to deep dive into things. Mm-hmm. So my son and my partner, you know, they'll go deep into a topic and they'll do all these kind of rabbit warrens into the internet and find out all these extraordinary facts about things. And they wouldn't have been able to access that information without the internet. So I've had to let go a lot of my snobbery around where we get our information from. Yeah. Now, obviously, I love books. I think books are important, and reading to your kids is vital. But also, you know, I've really had to understand that we all need different things to be able to access information. And the internet has been amazing. You know, one of the things to keep an eye on, though, ADHD people are more likely to get addicted to the internet.
Yes.
Got to keep an eye on that too. But, you know, I've had to do less talking and more listening. I think that's been the biggest thing that I've learned along the way having a neurodivergent kid, is that I had all these ideas of what it was to be a successful person in the world, and I've had to scrap all of those and actually look at who he is and what he can be and what his potential is. So that's been huge. I'm grateful for that.
I know. Yes. It's a gift that we wish we'd had with all of our kids, because they all deserve that.
You know? And we can have it for everyone in the world.
Yes.
You know, it makes me look at people different. It makes me think all those things where I used to judge people on their ability to spell. What a horrible thing to do.
I know.
Totally.
So I would say everybody I've met in these disability and neurodivergent communities, they become better people for it, because you do have to let go of a lot of your snobbery and a lot of your the ideas that your preconceptions about what a person is, and really learn to be so much more empathetic and do much more listening.
And you go back to realizing that actually writing and reading is about communicating. It's not about putting the comma in the right place or I before E. None of that actually matters. It's about, you know, you get a letter from your child or a card and it says I love you. Isn't it about that? It's not whether the capital I is done. And, that was a huge moment
for me. The first time they might send you a text.
Yes.
And you're just like, wow.
Yeah, huge. And
there will always be people that obsess over words.
Always.
I am in that group. And I'm very, you know, I'm very proud to be part of a group that do obsess over where a comma goes. Yes. And that's totally fine too. But, you know, there are people who obsess over classical music. There are people who obsess over how trains are made. So we've got to be passionate about something. But to expect that everybody is going to have the same capacity to express themselves is just unfair. And it's actually, it really blocks out a lot of information we can be receiving from people who communicate differently.
I don't know
if you saw that incredible documentary, The Reason I Jump, based on the young Japanese autistic boy who at 13 years old, 10 years ago, wrote this extraordinary book. An incredible writer explaining what it's like to be a nonverbal autistic person. And as part of the International Film Festival, they showed a documentary interviewing young nonverbal autistic people around the world. And a lot of them, when they're given the support and the capacity to be able to communicate, have the most extraordinary minds. And we forget that there are so many ways to express ideas than just through written or verbal text. So I've had to learn so much, and it's been a good wake-up call for me as a bit of a book snob.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Tell us about how you named it and what's the significance with Wild Things.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wild Things. Okay, my all-time favorite picture book is Where the Wild Things
Same.
Are by Maurice Sendak. Yep. And, you know, there are so many beautiful things about that book, but it really is, I think, the core of it, that, you know, children express themselves in ways that aren't always pleasant to be around. But amazingly, so many kids' books have characters that are really anti-authoritarian. You know,
I love them.
They stand up for themselves. You know, sometimes they're cheeky. You know, if you think of, who's the one who lives in the plaza? Eloise. Imagine her being your actual child. You'd be tearing your hair out. So we love these kind of kids in literature, but somehow when we have them in real life, we don't know how to handle them. We're telling them to be quiet, to sit down, to stop moving. And so Wild Things is a tribute to our children that find it really difficult to do all of those sit down, be quiet, stop moving, and how sometimes their behavior is just information that below the surface is all stuff going on for them.
Yep.
And really it's our job as the grown-ups in the room to try to understand what's creating that behavior rather than just react to it. And so I use excerpts from kids' books all throughout of beautiful Wild Things.
Yeah, it's
and
perfect.
Remind parents
Pippi Longstocking. I love her. Oh,
I just I wanted a sign made for the we built our house, and I wanted a sign made for the front, like in French, that said "Where the Wild Things Are," because I was like, "This is us. We are where the wild things are." I've got embroidered the little crown. One of my sons has "Where the Wild Things Are" on a poster in his room. I can't love that book. I think the twins, I think I read it to them every day for 2 years.
Mm.
They were obsessed with it, and they still say, "I'll eat you up, I love you so." I'm like, yes.
And there's so much, there are so many beautiful stories that come out about the author and illustrator, Maurice Sendak. And, you know, he talks about how he always felt like he was writing books for himself. He never thought he would write them down to children. And there are elements of that book that just are a little bit on the edge scary. And I think that's where the really good authors just come in and they really write to the child they have within themselves. Mm. Roald Dahl is another good example. Mm. And, you know, I think we forget that children, they, you know, they do have the capacity for big feelings, and so they do recognise themselves in these characters. So, it's just beautiful. Roald Dahl, big fan too.
Yeah. It's
It's a
great name for the book. It's just great.
And what was sort of the what was the hardest thing about the book, or what was the thing that was most challenging to write?
I have to say the bits that came out the easiest but were the hardest to hand over to my publisher were the personal bits, the memoir, I guess. In the beginning they were very light on the ground.
Yes, I can relate.
I didn't feel like I didn't want to write a memoir. I didn't want to write a parenting book. No, don't do what I did.
Yeah.
And but every time I put a bit of myself in, they were always the bits that people would respond to the most.
Yes.
So those are definitely the hardest bits. But I do think we carry stories within us, and when we share our stories, that is really the way we connect with other people.
Yep.
There's heaps of research squashed in there as well that I've tried to make it palatable as possible.
But yeah, I think really.
But I think what will connect the readers, I'm hoping, is the personal stories.
Yeah,
and I
definitely
have some other beautiful personal stories in there that people gave me as well. Mm. So they were the hardest to write just because they're the bits where I feel the most vulnerable and exposed.
Yeah, I understand. The story about the teacher.
Yeah, I know. That was kind of the moment.
It stopped me in my tracks.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's a familiar one, just where you feel like, I guess, you know, I had made the mistake thinking that our mainstream education system would give my son all the things that he needed. And I hadn't realized until that moment that it was actually up to me to advocate.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, I knew this already, but I just took forever to recognize this. And so that was a moment where, you know, my son was being hauled into this room to be told off by teachers regularly.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, you know, I had thought you could see that beautiful little boy underneath that scowl and that hood and that crossed arms. But of course you can't. He's just another kid playing up in the classroom. So I have to be the one that's what he needs and fight for him behind the scenes, because no teenager likes you advocating for them.
Oh, no.
But I realized that was my job, and I'm about as non-confrontational as a marshmallow, so you know, it's not easy to do.
It's not easy.
But you have to, because no one else is going to do it. It's not – their teachers are amazing people. They go into because they love kids.
Oh, yeah.
But we expect too much of them. They're not, you know, social workers. They're not doctors and nurses, and so – you know, fortunately, I'm of the education and the means that I can create this body of people around my son to support him. But the other, another person I interview in the book works in schools where there are very socially disadvantaged families with kids attending who may have arrived from very traumatic backgrounds, may be living in very challenging conditions, some of them without even visas, so can't access support systems. And so I don't want to waste public resources or teachers on my son, because I can pay for psychologists and counsellors and all those kind of supports. I'm really happy for those free resources to be going to the kids and families that can't access them. So, I've had to really step up and learn to be an advocate. It's not my favourite hat to wear, but...
No.
No one tells you that when you're pregnant. No one tells you that's something, do they?
There needs to be
And then what sort of advocate do you want to be? Do you want to be a someone who's... You know, no one teaches you that either.
No, you have to be all different advocates.
Yeah.
Depending on who you're talking to and Oh, yeah, it's super tricky. But I tell you something funny. We were sitting around the table the other night and Buzz was asking me questions and he asked me about a particular teacher and I was really like, I said, well, you know what I did? And then he videoed me and he was like, this is my mum. And I was like, oh, like he was so proud of how much I went into bat for him. And I was like, wow, I just had no idea. I mean, he's 17 now, but I had no idea that he loved those stories. Like they're, you know, when children ask for stories about their childhood, he likes the stories where I went in and stood up for him. Mm. So I'm like, at the time, I would have diarrhea before I did it, right? But now he's like, look at her. And I was like, wow.
Yeah. And because if you can't get your parent to back you up, who is there in the world?
Well, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it is also just that thing that for the child that may have no belief in themselves. I mean, my son spent years thinking he was a failure because he just didn't succeed no matter how he tried. So, you know, if I can't have total belief in him, who is there in the world that can? So, you know, there's someone that can always see something in you is so important no matter who you are.
I just wanted to say that if for those of you who have the book, on page 41 and 42, you talk about driving in the car and Sam opens his NAPLAN results. I was just like big fat tears. Like I just hid my NAPLAN results because they were my, you know, fourth and fifth children and I knew I didn't want them to see them. But just him like, you know, I'm dumb, aren't I? Like, you know, like how do you possibly articulate, no, this is a system that's not set up for you, but you're forced to do what the system says and then you're judged against it. Like,
you can feel you realizing in that moment, oh my gosh, like that was so beautifully written.
Powerful.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a really tricky balance, isn't it? And obviously every parent with a child that has a disability will be faced with different challenges. But I think, you know, for a while I was all about, oh, Richard Branson has dyslexia and terrible people in the world and neurodivergent. But, you know, that's not going to be the case for everybody.
No.
There will be people that go through school completely challenged and don't become superstars at the end of it.
Most.
Yes, I actually struggle with that narrative.
And look, I understand it because, you know, you do want your child to think you can achieve whatever you set out to achieve.
Yes.
But also not set them up for failure as well because, you know, whatever it is. And so in the end, I got to this place where I was saying to my son, if you can find a way to support yourself and to be doing something you're passionate about, that is an extraordinary success.
Really?
It's not about whether you're going to be a billboard for somebody or, you know, earn lots of money or whatever. It's if you can do something that you get excited about waking up in the day to do, that's have that in my work. You know, every day I'm excited to do what I do. So, yeah, I think that was a real lesson for me to stop giving him these kind of slightly unrealistic models to aspire to and just you be the best that you can be.
Yes.
You're going to have to work hard. Yes, it's going to be boring some of the time too. And, yes, there will be heaps of failures, but I'm here. You know, I'm your spotter. You're up on the practice, but I'll catch you, mate.
Yeah.
Oh, lucky boy, hey.
Yeah.
Lucky me. Gosh.
I know.
They transform us.
Really do. Yeah.
Yeah.
To way better people.
Oh, yeah. Way better. Way, way better.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
What was the easiest thing to write in the book then, if we've talked about the hardest?
The easiest thing, I think, was probably, I actually really nerded out on the research. I was quite surprised how much I enjoyed doing that. So there are some extraordinary books out there that go into the neuroscience of what happens in your brain when you're learning to read. And because one thing that I didn't know, and a lot of people out there might not know, is that we're not born with the capacity to read. We're born with the capacity to speak our mother tongue because we hear it in the womb. And plus that's something we've had in our brains for 100,000 years. Written language, it has only been around for 5,500.
Yes.
That's relatively new, and we don't actually have a part in our brain primed for that. So we have to rewire our brain through practice and through specific teaching to be able to read. And this was just blew my mind reading all these books about that. So there's Stanislas Dehaene, who's this extraordinary neuroscientist in France, Marianne Wolfe, who studies dyslexic children. And so all these incredible minds writing these dense books.
Yes.
And I had so much fun thinking, okay, now how would I explain this to someone over a cup of tea?
Yes.
Oh, you did it. Down
in the simplest language. And that was actually really fun. It was like kind of putting a puzzle together. So I hope that it comes across as being accessible but not dumbing down at all. I'm hoping
not at all. No. I felt like this was written for the everyday Mandy and Kate.
Yeah, definitely. Right? And at the back, you put all the resources, even the breakdown from each chapter.
Oh, and perfect. Thanks for including us too.
Oh, yeah, thanks for including us.
Thank you.
Of course. Because I think the number one reader of this book will either be someone who struggles to read themselves, and a few of my adult dyslexic friends have said, oh, thank goodness, a book I can read.
Yes.
But also a panicky parent. Panicky parent has the time to read a really dense book on neuroscience.
None.
So wanted to make it accessible, maybe even a little bit funny.
And hopefully, hopefully educators.
That would be really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, I think another really important thing for me to learn along the way was that we're all on the same side.
Yes.
Because sometimes in some of these parent groups, understandably, I do think teachers get a bit of a hard time.
We know
what that feels like. But they're working within this very anxious.
Of course.
And so I think I've really tried to put forward is it's very supportive of teachers. And it's, in fact, a lot of the people I interview are teachers and us.
Yep.
What resources do you need?
Yes, that's the question.
That was a great question. Yeah.
I remember when I moved my boys out of the junior school they were in, which was a prep to 12, and I moved them to another school. And the principal of the junior school said, I know what you want. You just want aides in every classroom. And I said, yes, that's what I want. That's 100% it. And you think that's a bad thing. And the school that they're at has aides in every classroom and the kids fly. Like all the kids,
of course.
You know, that's how it should be. One teacher cannot be, I mean, I have five children and I did not manage to know what they were all doing. So we're asking one teacher to look at 18, 25, 30 kids and know what they're doing? No.
When I moved my daughter to the special school and they have like 12 children in the class with a teacher and you're like, wow, okay, and ES is moving around. There was more stuff. Photos on the wall than children.
Yeah. And I mean, it would just.
And I was just like, wow.
And I remember saying to this principal, who obviously couldn't change anything because he's not at the education department, if you put aides in the classroom, you're going to cut down on the money that you're going to spend on people later in life. You're actually giving them freedom, you know, for the rest of their life. Yeah. So I don't care if the school has a nice oval, right? But I care that these kids can't read.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a fantastic thing that you say too, because that was the number one thing that all the teachers I interviewed said. So they all had different suggestions, but the number one thing was lower child to teacher ratio.
Yeah,
they just
have too many kids coming in with all their things. Some of them just haven't had breakfast.
And
and so it's too much to expect of one teacher,
too
as
much.
You said. To manage all of these things. So aides in each classroom. There's a fantastic teacher I interviewed, Francine, who works in this very low socioeconomic area, where she'd actually come up with the idea of having students who were studying things like speech pathology and counselling and social work actually come in and do their training at the school. I mean, what a brilliant and easy idea.
Yep.
you know, those kids that really need that extra support in the early days, imagine if we got it right early on, what our population would be when they all grow up.
Oh, well, it would be beyond game changing.
Yeah.
You know, my scholarship, who obviously had a scholarship, the private school that she went to, when they're in year 11 and 12, for English, they only have 12 kids in the class, right? So obviously everything that's wrong with the world that one private school gets to do this, but it shows that they know that's how kids learn. So they didn't have a different curriculum to anybody else. They just have more time with the teacher. That's it.
Yeah.
So, and these are children who are bright, you know, textbook bright, whatever you want to call it, still do much better. Everyone does better with, you know, better ratios. I mean, when we went to school, 35. I remember having 35 kids in my class. But you know what? Mum didn't care how I went at school, so.
But I also think, you know, going back to that, there was definitely less pressure on kids for that number at the end of year 12.
Way less.
It was so much more acceptable to leave in year 10 and do apprenticeship.
Yes.
It wasn't expected that every child would be academic. You know, I think there's more and more pressure on kids. There's an extraordinary book written by, I think it's Lucy Culkin, the Guardian journalist, called Beautiful Failures, about a huge research she did into the ridiculous amount of pressure that kids are put under today. Get that number after 13 years of study. Oh. That's not what life is about.
No. You know?
Life is so much more. And as my son would say, why do I even have to do English? You know, you were forced to do maths for year 12.
I agree.
Why do I have to do English?
I agree. I am on his team. I do not understand it. You can do basic maths, but you can't do basic English. So it's so wrong. It's so ableist. Yeah. But anyway, society's decided.
I think you're in Melbourne as well. We've been parenting through the pandemic, through the lockdowns. That completely changed my whole perspective as well. I was like, just be happy.
Yeah.
Just choose whatever subjects are going to be, you're going to feel good about yourself. That was a shift as well.
And isn't it amazing how many parents really got to notice sometimes for the first time their kids were struggling? Yeah,
so many of us.
How is it, my goodness, my child, how is it that you're in grade 4 and you're still not reading or you're just not able to keep up with what's going? And so there's a lot of, I've noticed even during, and I know Emma Shiana talked about this in her press club talk, a lot of people even recognising their kids being on the spectrum as well.
Yep.
You know, and then a lot of parents, when they know their children are on the spectrum, thinking, oh, but my kid's just like me. Oh, hold on, maybe I'm on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And that's a very common thing that happens.
Yep.
And, you know, as horrible and difficult and challenging as that period was, I would still say that's what saved my son and I.
Right.
We were forced for the first time for almost a period of 2 years to spend a lot of time together, and no teenager would choose to do that with his mum voluntarily.
No.
So then he was roaming the streets at all hours.
Yeah.
Friends were all locked down. There was nowhere for him to go.
Yes.
So we spent a lot of time together, and I signed up to do a counselling course online, and I've since completed a degree in gestalt psychotherapy as well.
Wow.
And I thought, I need to upskill. I'm not supporting my son in the way that he needs. And the biggest thing I learned was to do less talking, more listening. And so I learned so much about him. And the more I listened, the more he opened up, the more he became able to express his emotions.
Mm.
So, you know, to see a 16-year-old boy at the end of your kitchen table just flooded with tears saying, I don't know where this is coming from. And me saying, yeah, I do. You know, this is years and years and years of trapped tears. And that wouldn't have happened hadn't we not spent that huge amount of time together. Mm. So as hard as it was, I'm really grateful for it. It back to me.
Oh, when you talk about the grief at school and him just crying, just how sad he was and how trapped it had been in him for so long. Oh, it was really hard to read as a parent.
It's really heartbreaking. I feel just awful. I think because, like I say all the time, he was this gorgeous, sunny, curly-haired little kid.
Yeah.
But even as a young adult now, he's told me that he used to come home from primary school and hide himself in his room to cry because he didn't want us to worry about him.
Yeah.
So I just think all those years he was protecting me. You know?
Yeah, I know.
Sweethearts.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Well, I just want to relieve you of that guilt in this space because the peas are, we are all you in all the ways. Right? And so, you know, so when you're with us and when you're talking to our community, we're all going, yeah, high five, we missed it too.
We did.
It's okay. And it you're doing okay. a tremendous job.
Thank you. And look, that's the gift that both of you are giving to people like me is that, you know, just that safe space to say, look, I don't feel like I've done a very good job. Mm-hmm. And for other people to say, it's fine, we did it too. You know,
it's so powerful.
It is. And it's never too late to upskill.
No.
As well. I feel now, at 15, I decided my son needed me to upskill. I needed to learn to be an advocate. I needed to turn things around. And I'm really proud to say that I did.
Yeah.
You know, he's still got a long road ahead of him.
Of course.
But the, you know, I changed how he feels about himself.
Yeah.
We've found other career pathways. He's doing a pre-apprenticeship at the moment in electrotechnology.
Brilliant. You know,
But more importantly, he feels good about himself.
Yes. You know,
that's all that matters.
He knows he's different to most people, but he's actually called that. And why would you want to be the same as everybody else anyway?
No.
And once you can break out of those boxes of schooling,
he
can be who he wants to be.
Oh, yeah. He's just got to get through school.
Yes.
And I think, you know, you're harsh on yourself as we are, but we're also, as we always say, proudly mediocre. Let's just be proud that we didn't get it all right. But when you write that, you know, you found an old journal or whatever that you'd written in the middle of the night, trust your kid, they will show themselves to you, be ready to love who you see. I was like, oh, yeah, they do show themselves to you. And we try and not see it because they're not the same as the kid sitting next to them in class. But so you were on his team the whole time.
And sometimes when they show themselves to you, it's scary.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like all of it as well. You know, there can be things, parts of their personalities where you think, whoa, that's not what I wanted my kid to be.
Oh, definitely.
But, you know, they're still evolving. They're still working out who they are in the world. So if they're constantly showing themselves to you and you're being shocked or you're showing some kind of judgment, how will they possibly evolve and open up? You know, teenage boys have access to extraordinarily toxic things.
Yes.
In the internet, and they're going to take some of that on. And if you just shut them down and tell them they're bad people, why would they possibly share those ideas with you again? But if you use that as starting points for conversations, that's interesting. Why do you think like that? And is that really what you feel? Or is that potentially what someone you follow on the internet has told you? Eventually they do come up with their own moral values and their own perspective of the world, which is probably more similar to what you were hoping they would be. But they've kind of almost break away and reject you first before they take on all your feminist values.
That's right. It's so true. It's so true. Although one of the twins said to me the other day, I am just doomed to be a feminist. And I was like, yeah, you are.
Yeah,
he's got two very feminist sisters. And I'm doomed, Mum. It's like, yep, sorry. You can fight it, but it's coming back.
Can you tell us about your picture book you wrote with Eliza as well?
Yes.
That question. So Eliza and I now live in the same town. I recently moved to Castlemaine.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So we've been friends for a while, and Eliza is an extraordinary musician, producer, and also a disability advocate. So when she came to me and said she'd really like to write a book for families living with disability,
yeah,
I come on board with that? And I said, oh, my goodness, are you serious? Of course, I'd love to.
Yes.
And so every single family depicted in the story, so we meet, from memory, seven families from the deaf community, I'm still getting au fait around all the terms, vision impaired families, a child that uses a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And so lots of different examples of the way that different families adapt and create an environment that allows them the possibility to be their whole selves, which is what Eliza taught me about what the social model is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go into these homes and these kids are awesome. They're having great time, you know, come over to my house, come over and play. We're going to have a fantastic time together. And so every single family is based on families that Eliza knows. So she ran all of them past different people in the disability community to check that they felt well represented. And for that, certainly that's an important part of the book, is representation. But also for kids like me when I was growing up. I didn't grow up meeting any disabled families, and so I'm still stumbling around the terminologies, you know, the kind of language that makes people feel comfortable. And so if this book is anything, it's a conversation starter in the home, in the classroom, how to desensitize language around how to ask appropriate questions, but not to put that burden on disabled community either, but really to open kids up to tap into their curiosity and not to shut that down and make them, you know, don't look at that person, they're disabled. It's all about, these are people in our community, let's go into their houses, let's meet them.
Beautiful.
And let's start these conversations around what it's like to live, to have a as an amputee, or what it's like to live with androcoplasia. Can you tell me that? That's probably a form of dwarfism.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, it shows these beautiful families to children. They're invited into their homes, and it just normalizes these beautiful people in our environment that are living lives like you and me.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. I was searching for books like that when girls were little. I'd be on sort of forums and they'd be like, this book has an AFO, which is the ankle foot orthotic. Okay, everyone buy it.
Yeah.
And I bought one for the kinder, and I bought one for grandma, and I bought one, you know, you're just like searching for how can we bring this into our family in a way that's joyful.
It's fun, it's joyful. There was a book I read when I was growing up, you may have had it too, called Come Over to My House by Dr. Seuss. And it was meeting kids all around the world that lived in different houses, you know, some in yurts. And so really this is a tribute to that, but it's different houses, people living with different abilities.
Beautiful.
Amazing.
Tell everyone to go and buy it.
Oh, thanks.
Yes,
we love Eliza. She's awesome.
She really is. Oh, fantastic.
I thought I should say that the title of your book isn't just Wild Things, it's How We Learn to Read and What Can Happen If We Don't. So I think I know the P's are going to be all over this, but there's lots of people who listen that, you know, our beautiful rectum communities, and they will really love it too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it really, it's just about learning that we're all different. And how do we support everyone in that journey, really? And just makes us all better people.
And it's pretty.
It's so pretty. It's very
cute. How did you choose all that? We know, like, that's amazing, all a process, isn't it?
Amazing cover designer. I'm so lucky to work with Heidi Grant Kids. Everyone's like, what? This is from the kids department. It's like, yeah. Children's publishers read adult books too.
Yes.
Children's publishers are all for parents.
Yes.
And because I love my publishing team and we publish so many beautiful books.
Yes.
Of course, they were with me the whole time I was struggling with my son. I might have to cancel meetings or come back and do it. So they knew the story the whole way through. So when I said, I think I need to write this into a book, they were so supportive of it. And so I can't imagine being held by a better publishing community.
Yeah.
And they also
published
Come Over to My House as well. So.
Yes.
Hey, how do you go, kids?
Yeah. Awesome.
Oh, it's an important working relationship.
Mm. Yeah, it's true. You develop really close relationships because I guess, you know, I'm one of those kind of weird people that's never had a proper job. And I've never worked hands on. But there's part of that I really feel like I miss out on. I miss, you know, the conversations where you turn up at work on Monday and ask about someone's weekend.
Yep.
And so this is as close as I'll ever get my community.
Yep.
They are the people that know who I am, where I'm at. I tend to be a big, big oversharer. So they're cool with that. They can handle that. And they're also the people that make sure that whatever I send out into the world is me, but also the best version of me that I can.
Safe.
We could talk to you forever and ever and ever. But is there anything that we've missed today that you would love to tell our P community?
I think when the podcast comes out, it will be launch week, and during that week, both Wild Things and Come Over to My House are going to be out at the same time. I've just updated my website, and I've got lots of events on the front page.
Oh,
so
good.
If you are in Melbourne and you'd like to come along to any, and I'll be updating it when I've got some interstate events and book signings too. So, love to see you. Love to meet more people in the P community.
Yeah.
And once again, just, you know, thank you for creating this beautiful space and for allowing me to be here among you.
Oh. So everyone is welcome.
Everyone.
Except for
Rex, right? Even them.
Texans that don't want to be re-educated.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Sally. It was fantastic to meet you.
And the book is amazing. I've just underlined all this stuff in there, and I'm like, who am I underlining this for? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, to read again.
Yeah, I just, I love it. I'm definitely going to give it to my daughter, who's the pediatric OT. She will devour it.
Go and buy a piece.
Love your work.
Well, we love yours.
Yes, thank you. Oh, she was so great.
So great. Peas, you have to buy the book. It's beautiful.
Yes.
It's got, what are they called in the very beginning when someone, what's it called when it's on the front of the book? A recommendation?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
she asked us.
There's a recommendation in The Dust Jacket by Kate and Mandy.
Yes, there is.
It's just true, so weird.
And it's our style.
To open it up and look at it and go, oh, that's my name.
But it's true. So it says, this made us tear up immediately.
Oh, definitely.
An important book for us all. We got sent through like some of her original stuff.
Yes.
And I was just already like tears rolling down my face. Like,
incredible.
This is so, no one talks about what it feels like when your children can't read, when you take reading so seriously and you feel like you're the only one.
And at the end, like on the back cover, it says, after all, they say school isn't for everyone, but if everyone must go to school, then why not? You're like, that's right. They've all got to go. So, it was just a beautiful book piece. You're going to love it, love it, love it.
Yep. So thank you, Sally, for coming on. Okay, what made you cry this week?
Okay, so this week what made me cry, I've got two things. One, obviously the world is mourning the Queen.
Yeah.
And there's lots of mixed emotions about all of that, and I get that it's tricky. But I was really sad about Uncle Jack. He's just got the most beautiful face, a beautiful Indigenous elder in our city and our town. And, you know,
it's very poignant, actually.
Yeah, it really
was. It was like when Mother Teresa died after Princess Di, and you're like, sort of similar, you know, like.
Yeah. And so that's made me very teary, and just seeing his beautiful smiling face, going, gosh, you gave the world a lot after it really served you up a lot of crap.
That's right.
And you just gave back so beautifully.
Yeah.
And the other thing, we have a listener of this podcast. She's been on it, our beautiful friend Lou. She did an ADHD episode for us probably 2020, I reckon. It was definitely during the pandemic.
Yeah, we were in lockdown. Yep.
And she's been given a really, really tricky diagnosis herself, and she's in for the fight of her life. So she's got, you know, beautiful boys that need her, and, yeah, I've just been really, really achingly sad about that, and you just realise how absolutely unfair life is. It's just unfair. So, what about you this week, Mandy?
Oh, well, the world news, and then I had to have root canal, and so I go into the dentist and I said, and the Queen's died, my tooth. It's not funny, but I've just been in pain, and I just want to say to the dentist, I'm a carer, and it's hard to be in pain.
Yeah, because I can't stop,
but I'm at the mercy of dentists and, you know, what do you say? You can't beg them.
Well,
I've wanted to.
Yeah.
And then I think, oh my gosh, Mandy, you're not in pain all the time, and plenty of people are. So just, you know, your pain can be relieved hopefully one day.
Yeah.
The
toothache is different.
Sobbing over the bench, spitting out blood, and these dentists thinking, wowza, look at this one. But not a care in the world about how I look or sound or feel.
Yeah.
Just like, please help me.
Yeah, help me, help me. We had our beautiful pea lunch. Poor Mandy's like, how am I going to cope with my mouth? And, yeah, I know there are worse things in the world, but it was really, really hard.
Yeah, and it's just been a long time. Oh, anyway, I've just had a shocking year of teeth.
You have.
So, and then I think of all our beautiful people that are nonverbal. How do they tell people when they've got tooth pain?
I know.
I've been crying about that, Kate.
Yeah, I know.
How do people tell when they've got screams?
I know, and they've got to wait till they get a fever and someone goes, oh, shit, you've got an infection. I know.
Yes,
I know.
I've really been thinking about a lot. So, I've just been poor Mandy.
Also thinking about other people.
Yeah, I've tried. Yeah, anyway, what about you make a difference?
Okay, so I've got a big make a difference this week. There's a restaurant in Melbourne that's very cool called Gimlet, and I got to go there for dinner and someone else paid.
Oh, wow.
I don't have a lot of money at the moment. And it's an expensive dinner, you know, like $150. Wow. Like I'm talking, wow. You just wouldn't do that, right? Well, I mean, some people would, but most of us wouldn't. And it was just lovely and the food was amazing. Mm. And you know, you're just like, oh. Anyway, it was beautiful. And the maitre d' or whatever came over at the end. And I know we've been out of lockdown for a year, but it was someone's birthday, a friend's birthday. And she said to the table, I'm never getting over seeing friends having a birthday ever again.
Mm.
And I thought, yeah, it's been a year. And she's still... Mm. That was what she said to our group. It wasn't, yes, thanks for coming to my restaurant or did you enjoy the food, or it was just like, you got to be together.
Yes.
So I just think, yeah, I think it's not just the food anymore.
It's not.
You know? So, yeah, it was a big make a difference. Yeah. Mm. What about you?
Well, mine was the beautiful pea lunch.
Yes.
Thank you to Jackie.
It was amazing.
Everybody came, yes, and it was so lovely to meet you all, and the drawing we got from that gorgeous little girl. And, yeah, and just to see,
cards.
I just stood back and watched, you know, a couple of the women with their little pea shoots
each other
crawling and talking
around
to each other, and I just thought, this is the moment, Mandy.
Yep.
And, you know, thank you to everyone who came. Thank
yep.
you to Jackie for putting it on so beautifully.
It was incredible. A whole restaurant
awesome.
Of peas.
I know. It was awesome. So,
yep. Scholarship came and
yeah,
she was like,
was great.
I am excited about this food. It's been so long since we've just gone through it. I haven't had a buffet since pre-COVID.
Yeah, of course.
So it was just amazing.
Yeah, and I was just really super thankful. And Jackie was just overwhelmed, and people were saying, oh, I loved your episode. And,
yes.
and thank you to the women that were all ESs, all the A's
yes.
at the end, that were talking to us. And I had a lovely chat with them at the end. And just, you know, peas are encouraging.
Oh, best community
they?
Ever.
Yeah,
it was
so
beautiful.
It was terrific. And then that night, Gorgeous Molly got to walk on the MCG
yes.
with Special Olympics. So Team Vic were invited to walk on the MCG. So she had to get her uniform.
Because it's footy finals for those of you outside of Victoria
so
or
really
Australia. It's a
deal.
Massive
course,
thing in Melbourne.
The TV
massive.
Didn't show them.
Of
but
course.
Anyway,
yes.
People got some footage for me. But
yeah,
she was very excited and had a lot of Collingwood fans behind her
yes.
teaching her some language. She said they were saying, bullshit, bullshit. And she said, so I did too.
And they won. Let's forget.
I
Collingwood
know.
Won.
Oh, anyway, it was good for her to spend some time with Team Vic as a whole because we're
yeah,
going to be going
yeah.
down to Launceston for that. So, and I just thought of all the Special Olympics people, Victorians, they are the biggest survivors.
Oh, they
so
really
for
are.
Them
yeah,
to
yeah.
have that experience, I was proud of them.
Yeah,
yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yep. What about your laugh?
Oh, so what made me laugh this week was that I was in the car with Buzz and Woody. And Buzz leaned over to the steering wheel. We were stopped at the lights. And he went as if he was going to punch it. And I was like, oh, because the horn would go off.
Yeah.
And he goes, Mum, if you punch this, it'll fight back. You know, like the airbag will go. I just grabbed his hand. And I was like, can you imagine? I'm sitting at the lights. I beep the horn
airbag.
At someone and then the airbag goes off in my face. I was like, oh. I laughed for a long
one.
Time, but then I was like, oh, still a bit on the edge with these children.
Oh, yes, they can always surprise you.
Yes, so anyway.
Oh, boy.
The airbag didn't go off, but yes, the car
Good.
Can fight
Good.
Back.
Yes, it can fight back. Boy.
Anyway.
Oh.
What
well,
about you?
I laughed. I didn't really laugh in the beginning, but I laughed at the end. So poor Molly had a moment where she was spraying some ant spray in our kitchen. We've had a whole lot of ants since our house got re-stumped. They've just gone, hello.
Right.
So anyway, and then she got into a bit of a tiz, I will say, because she thought that she'd got some Mortein on her thumb and she put the thumb in her mouth.
Yeah.
So I couldn't quite help her. So what I've learned about when we get in one of these things is we just have to get to the facts. So I rang the poisons line.
Yes.
And I said, hello. Greg.
Yep.
My name's Mandy. This is my daughter. Da 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 da. She's got an intellectual disability. She's like, hello.
Oh.
And he said, I said, she's had some Mortein on her thumb and we've washed it, but she's worried she's poisoned herself. And he said, you are 100% safe.
Oh.
Which was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I said, did you hear that? You are 100% safe. Okay. So I just thought, shout out, remember the poisons line.
Yep.
Or just think about when you need the facts. But what made me laugh was I thought we were in this really beautiful moment. So I was like, thank you very much. You've really really helped. And he goes, okay, what's your postcode?
Gotta tick all the boxes. Like, 3-3-3-3-3.
Yeah, pretty much. I just thought, oh, I thought we were gonna have a thank you very much. You've really helped our situation. And I'm really
no.
Okay. All
okay,
right.
Okay, here we go.
I laughed about it for ages because I thought he was like, here comes another one of these phone calls. But we need the statistics.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, gosh. So anyway, if you're on one of those lines, thank you.
Yes.
And, yeah, sometimes I just have to go to the facts. So
oh, definitely.
I think it's a helpful thing to remember. And so then I went on. I was like, right, so we know we've got the kids helpline. We've got Lifeline. Yep. We've got the poisons line. And Miss 11 goes, okay, thanks for the mandy-splaining.
Ah. Oh.
I was like, yeah, I am. I'm mandy-splaining to you. Yep. There are phone lines
yeah.
for you.
Sometimes, you know, the real estate agents put out those magnets and they have all the
yeah, do they? All the numbers on them.
Yeah, they're quite handy. You're like,
yeah, you forget about them, but they are there.
And so you can just get some scissors and chop the real estate agent's photos off and just have them on your fridge.
If you can find the scissors, people.
If you can,
thank
you know.
Thank you for all the scissors memes.
Always send
constantly
them.
Makes me laugh. Thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, we'll let you go to
we
that
will.
Peas.
Yes.
Thanks
rate
for listening.
And review. There may not be
we'll
snap peas for the next couple of weeks because we're on school holidays.
School holidays.
We're on part-time profile. I don't know. What do you call it? But anyway, we're limited
we're
podcasting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, and we'll see you when we're back.
We will.
Okay, see you.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.